Thank you, Simon, and most welcome back. We continue our discussions on goodwill impairment, and we have one final paper to go, and I'll hand over to Tim for it. Thank you.
Thanks, Andreas. Good afternoon, everyone. So agenda paper 18D provides staff's analysis of the feedback on the board's Bloom review not to reintroduce amortization of goodwill. And in particular, staff have considered whether there have been any new arguments provided by respondents, some trends that staff have identified in the feedback, user views, whether amortization of goodwill can resolve concerns about the timely recognition of impairment losses on goodwill, and what other factors might be relevant for the board to consider given the divergent views held by respondents, for example, convergence with US GAAP. And this analysis is discussed in paragraphs 12 to 61 of the paper. The staff have then outlined the possible options the board could consider with respect to the subsequent accounting for goodwill and what feedback or arguments would support those options. And these options are discussed in paragraphs 62 to 135. The staff have identified four options: retaining the impairment-only model, reintroducing amortization, a decision to reintroduce amortization that's contingent upon the board's other decisions, and some other approaches suggested by respondents. At this stage, the analysis for illustrative purposes, and staff have not analysed the relative merits of the different arguments or the different options with a view to arriving at a staff recommendation. The staff intend to perform this analysis and develop a recommendation for the board to consider at the September board meeting. So I'd now like to open the discussion up and ask board members whether you have any questions or comments on the paper.
Thanks, Tim. And I open the floor. Tom, please.
Yeah, so I guess I can start, then I can relax. Again, a really good paper. I think one of the things I did find a bit difficult in reading is this question of new arguments. And I really would like to avoid getting into sort of semantic arguments. And I would change the question is, to what have we learned? Because we received a lot of feedback on almost everything. I think we have incremental knowledge in every case, and whether it's enough to be called, you know, totally new is another issue. So I'd like to throw away this, you know, new, old sort of thing and just say, what did we learn? I can think of some examples, and I think it would be important that we document some of these. Like, I thought you had really good references on the efficacy of the impairment test from the academic research. And what the evidence showed is that impairment can be late, and it can still be informative. And it illustrates that these are not mutually exclusive. A lot of people think they are. But you can actually not be as timely as when the first market first starts to perceive it. But by the time of the actual impairment test, there can still be significant information disclosed, even if there was a run-up to the announcement. So I think we have a lot of information that can allow for a nuanced and more thoughtful description of things. And I'd like to sort of recommend that we document as many of these as possible. Another example, I think, is on the wasting, non-wasting. And again, here, we do still have a variety of opinions, but most of the people who sent opinions also sent background arguments and evidence to substantiate their opinions. And it is possible to go through those arguments and evidence and to distill them and come up with an, I won't even say an on balance, because I think you might have some arguments that argue for wasting that are legitimate and some for non-wasting. And I don't I will say one thing. I don't think we should go to a component. So to the degree that we can find elements of goodwill that are wasting and elements that are non-wasting, I think it's a non-starter to do components. But it would still be good to document that, that there are legitimate arguments for each. And if they're linked to components, let's document the arguments, and then we'll still decide what we should do. So I'd like to do it very much. What did we learn? Again, another place we got a lot of thoughtful responses on, if you do go to amortization, what would be the appropriate period, as opposed to a purely arbitrary period? So I'd like to gather a lot of this knowledge that we learned about. And I'll just close with one comment on the options. I'm not so courageous as to go near the prime choice yet. But on the contingent one, I think based on our last discussion, the odds of us improving an impairment test in a way that would get widespread acceptance is very, very low. So I would absolutely not make it contingent on improving the impairment test or not. Either I would not make the choice contingent on being able or not able to improve the impairment test. It's possible that we may want to think about the disclosure about business combinations, and there may be some relationship there that we may want to keep both those things on the agenda, that they may be mutually reinforcing a little bit. I'm not so sure about that one, but I don't see us improving the impairment test. So great paper, and thank you.
Thanks, Tom. And you can now be relaxed. Tadeo, please.
Thank you, Andreas. I agree with Tom that this paper is well prepared and definitely incremented our knowledge about the different views on this topic. And one point that I think it's important to be addressed in relation to the feedback received that indicate that for users, the disclosures related to the impairment test and the impairment test itself give them very important information, insights about the company, the acquiree and the acquirer. In this point, I think that the primary objective of the impairment test is a bit distorted. This is not primarily prepared for providing information of the subsequent performance of acquired business, but it does provide useful information to users, as you can see many feedbacks that we have the opportunity to read. And therefore, I would explore, in case we reintroduce amortization and drop the impairment test only model, how disclosures on subsequent performance on the acquired business could compensate the information users believe they will lose for not having these impairment test information anymore. And there is one additional comment that I would also like to make is on paragraph 109 states that even if amortization is based on a default period determined by the board, this could still be considered a reasonable estimate of the useful life. When I read this one, I was struggling to try to understand. I really would like to see more arguments to understand this statement, especially against the alternatives of management's estimate or even a combination of both. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeo. Over to Mary.
A bunch of thoughts / reactions, comments. I'm just flagging things that of points raised in the previous paper that I think interact if the purpose of this is to say, you know, first thoughts on an overall package, and that includes the idea of kind of flipping the expression, or maybe it's adding an objective to assess, you know, to say that it's the obligation to conclude that goodwill is recoverable and disclose the main reasons and to pursue a few impairment improvements. Then building on what Tom said, as I reflect on this morning's discussion of the earlier papers, while there was a fair amount of support for some specific improvements in the application of the impairment test, I did not hear anybody supporting a kind of, pursuing things that they thought would be significant improvements or the game-changing kind of approach to impairment. So building on Tom's comment, I think the idea of package that is contingent on doing that is one that falls away as a result of today's discussion. And then moving on to some other points, as I thought about the analysis, and it was particularly in this paper, of looking at calculations of the implied useful life by looking at impairments and, you know, what the implied useful life of goodwill that's recognized currently today is, it struck me that, first of all, having impairments isn't the same as saying I'm consuming goodwill in my ordinary operations. And so while it's an interesting question to think about, I'm not sure that I give a lot of weight to that data point. And the other thing it made me think about articulating is that elsewhere in financial reporting, when we have lumpy events, and I'm thinking, for example, and this is bold of bringing up insurance, but when we have lumpy events, let's say like hurricane damage, et cetera, we do not take an approach that says you can, with reasonable accuracy, predict what the incidents will be over a 30-year period, then take that and recognize a portion of it each year. We say, wait until it occurs, and the event is the trigger for recognizing the expense, rather than trying to smooth out something that is economically a lumpy event. And speaking of, you know, relating the financial reporting to the economics, I thought the analysis that you had about why is goodwill so much a larger balance, and thinking of it in the context of, for example, low interest rates and increased M&A activity, is a very important point to bring out when you're looking at the concern of how the level of goodwill has grown. A couple of other things, and today focused on paragraph 109, as did I when I was going through this paper. Like today, I don't see how use of a board-specified either default or maximum provides useful information about the user's view, about the reporting entity's management's view of the value of the acquisition. And I'm speaking loosely when I say value of the acquisition. I'm trying to stay away from more loaded terms. And I think looking, one specific request I have to the staff in terms of bringing this paper back in September is to maybe discuss more explicitly what information we have about costs relating to transaction-specific assessing and reassessing the transaction-specific useful lives. I have a very strong recollection, having been able to sit in at the FASB roundtables back in November 2019, about their work on this topic. And it was basically universal that users were saying there is zero information, unless there is a transaction-specific assessment by management, about the useful life. And then that life may tell us something about expectations, et cetera. And what was universal from the preparers and the auditors is that imposing a requirement for a transaction-specific life would increase the costs of compliance beyond what is present today in an impairment-only model, even with great stress on the, you know, even though there's great stress and a lot of second-guessing and challenging on the impairment, because the costs of doing, updating, and defending the selection of life was so high that would swamp any savings. And so when I look at the package, and I think Tom's cautions about how much we can reach, and sorry, Tom, I'm putting words in your mouth, but how much we can reach sweeping conceptual conclusions, probably not a lot when we have things like some arguments for and some arguments against goodwill as a wasting asset. So when I think about the space in which we're going to be acting, I look at it and say, I think we need more about understanding the costs if we were to go to an entity-specific life, because a very bad project sequence would be first decide to propose reintroducing amortization, but with project specific, and in the end conclude that it's got to be specified by us, or a hurdle that people won't overcome because they need that safe harbor, they need that protection against second guessing. Because I think then what we will be doing is to split those two up, or end up having those two split, is just, to me, the worst possible outcome, a personal opinion. So I wrap up by saying, if you could do a bit more on that, that would be helpful. And I think Friday's educational session with FASB on this project may also help us understand their thinking a bit more. But fundamentally, I say, should we be making a change at this time? I haven't seen anything that says that the amortization expense itself is really useful information to most users. And we have seen evidence, which you report in this paper, that most expect that it will be adjusted out in a non-GAAP metric, as a non-cash item. And if that's the case, why are we making a change to introduce, going through the cost of change to introduce something that we're told is not relevant and smooths over a long period of time, something that actually happens in lumpiness and where the evidence, I think the balance of evidence is that the reflecting the lumpiness is relevant. So those are my thoughts and reactions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Bertrand.
Thank you, Andres. I thought the balance, the paper was really well balanced. Eventually, two nuances on paragraph 88. And it's exactly the paragraph Mary's just quoted, and I probably would have a similar comment on this one. I think that effectively NTT would adjust management performance measures to add back amortization expense. And the way I would nuance it, not because it is a non-cash item, but probably because it does not provide an idea of the organic performance. An organic operating performance of a company. The company I used to work for introduced adjusted EBIT as a non-GAAP measure in 2005, mostly after having discussed 2006. Sorry, after the first releases of the 2005 IFRS accounts, and it was mostly. So EBITA, adjusted EBIT was just essentially EBIT minus excluding the amortization expense of intangible assets acquired in a business combination, and eventually impairment expenses or income, but it was then marginal. So it was mostly to exclude the amortization expense of intangible assets acquired through business combination. And it enabled then users using this metric, EBITA, to compare the organic performance measure of the company I used to work for with their competitors, and notably one of them in Europe, that was mostly focused on organic growth. So I think essentially probably the reason why an amortization expense of goodwill would also be excluded from the non-GAAP measures. Another comment to nuance probably what is stated in the paper on paragraph 99. It said that the feedback and evidence gathered in the project highlights that the information provided by the impairment-only model is limited. What is the information we are talking about there? If it's the information provided in the notes, maybe the statement is fair. My experience as a preparer has been that we have always, the company was using the impairment test to ask itself the question each year as to which value is really allocated by the management, so by the executives at the management board on the various businesses of the group. And the question was also then to decide on the best allocation of resources to each businesses. And so I would see that as being of a lot of value, the exercise of the impairment test as it exists today, of a lot of value and of a lot of informative value for a company. And if it has informative value for a company, because it enhances then it contributes to enhance the internal control of the company. I would tend to think that it's also useful indirectly for users, if it's even though it's not an explicit direct information provided in the notes to the financial statements, but it then contributes to the overall qualitative information of the primary financial statements and overall the notes. So I would tend to disagree with the statement that an impairment test provides little information. I think for companies that tend, at least for many of them, to perform the impairment tests with a logic that is not just pure accounting compliance, it provides valuable information. And hence, I would tend to think that this indirectly provides an information to the market.
Thanks, Bertrand. Nick, please.
Thanks, Andreas. I think what staff are asking for me here is to kind of step back and tell them what really matters to me, if that's not clear already. And I guess that's against the background that, you know, in our standard setting work, there are a few subjects that generate such emotion and consume such resource as this one. I do worry that our investment here is disproportionate to the user relevance. You know, goodwill is an accounting construct. And if we look at the alternatives for the subsequent accounting, it's really a matter of choosing the least bad option. We argue about the degree of usefulness between amortization and impairment, but neither approach is particularly satisfactory. So that leaves me, you know, looking at paragraphs 83 and 89 in the staff paper, feeling challenged in terms of how to imagine moving from one approach to another can result in improvement in financial reporting. I think the danger is from the outside, this looks like a very introverted debate. It's quite distant from the day-to-day work of the majority of users of financial statements. And, you know, as I said earlier, what they really seek and value are better insights about the economics of M&A transactions. And so they want to have information that helps them assess the return on those investments and effectively play their role, a more effective role in the efficient allocation of resources. So for me, requiring reasonable but substantive disclosures about subsequent performance of acquisitions really is the opportunity to improve financial reporting here. If I think back to the UK's tried almost all variations dealing with goodwill. We've had write-off day one, we've obviously had amortization, and we've had impairment. And I think my experience is there is that users quickly establish coping mechanisms to deal with each of those circumstances. Whereas, you know, having that better information on performance of acquisition can really make a positive impact on investor decision making. So, you know, I think that's where my focus is. That's what really matters to me. From a personal perspective, in that regard, wouldn't rule out exploring the amortization of goodwill, but it would be conditional on better disclosures and substantive disclosures about M&A transactions. I think there'd also be, and staff talk about in the paper, a number of other issues that require resolution if we were to explore that route further. And those are around the transition arrangements. And there's been very little I can see that's been spoken about the potential treatment of historic goodwill balances. I think it'd be around presentation requirements. So it would facilitate with ease a reversal of an amortization charge on a consistent basis. And it would also be about disclosing information regarding goodwill that had been recognized together with amounts that had been subsequently amortized or impaired indeed. So there was record there, there was data, people could use that information to do the calculations that help them understand the economics of these transactions. So I think in terms of priority, what really matters to me are those disclosures and the decision on how to treat goodwill is, in a relative terms, less important to me than those disclosures. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Very clear. Bruce, please.
Thanks very much, Andreas. It is always interesting, as Nick says, to hear the discussion on this. And I always say I think we could spend days and end on discussing one way versus the other. I'm still of the belief that, I still think that kind of which way we go in this is going to be an interesting discussion in September, given I really don't believe we've got massive evidence driving each one of those. Just two things I want to make a comment on. The first one is, I was also drawing on that para 88, which talks about the adjustments that users make. I come from a jurisdiction in South Africa where the biggest metric people use on performance is headline earnings per share. And one of the first adjustments people do is we take out any impairment on goodwill. So, I think when Nick referred to those coping mechanisms, I think he's right. People have found different ways to just deal with how they would respond to whatever we decide we're going to do with goodwill and would work their way through on that. Interestingly, from a practical point of view, and I appreciate that this is kind of outside of where we were going, it wouldn't be the first time I would have heard from people how many preparers would have loved to have explored the 1 year, the immediate write-off. I appreciate it's not the option we're going through. We've had years of debate in terms of whether goodwill is an asset or not. But I think for many preparers, it's just that practicality of saying, if we could write this off, people would understand what it is. We actually don't believe we'd have to give much disclosure on why we're writing it off, because I think many users would understand. And we could focus then on kind of what was more important. Just one thing I wanted to comment on also was when we talk about if we do move to a model of impairment, of amortization, I don't believe that the period that was arbitrary. And a lot of people keep referring to the fact that we would just have to pick an arbitrary period. I don't think that's necessarily correct. In my mind, the move to an amortization model is so inextricably linked to the disclosures we're going to give, especially when we've got these subsequent accounting disclosures. These two should be speaking to each other. These are a package that we should be looking at. So I don't believe we can be looking just at saying, well, do you think impairment or amortization is the right answer without actually looking at the disclosures as part of that. So I think, and I guess it is a bit of a challenge to the staff. It's a bit like, well, which one do we put the cart before the horse? You kind of firstly need to make the decision on impairment or amortization and then discussion disclosures. But I guess in my mind, we would need to be almost look at them similar times, because to me, no matter which way we go on these, we need to improve the disclosures. And I think if we accept that we're going to improve the disclosures, then I think we can look at each of these options in terms of that. So just in terms of the analysis, which once again, I think has really kind of set the foundation for the decision we need to make in September, I strongly think we need to ensure that this is on the foundation that we're going to have these improved disclosures. And as a package, we need to look at it, not just as these separate decisions. Thanks, Andreas.
Thank you, Bruce. Jin Chao, please.
Thank you, Andreas. It's a difficult topic, And when I look at those four options, for me is that first I look at which option would really provide more useful information to the users. So this is first the priority when I look at it. So come back to which, Bertrand has mentioned that first impairment only model currently we apply. I also agree that it provides useful information. If company apply IAS 36, in a right way and those information, those estimates based on reasonable and supportable assumption, I think those information could be helpful for the users to make a judgment about future cash flow and how to value the shares or something like that. So this is first, I think I also agree impairment model can provide useful information. Secondly, whether reintroducing amortization could provide additional information to the users. I think when I look at the argument who supported the reintroducing amortization model. There are a couple of comments, a couple of arguments. First, it is wasting assets. I think this is the key, whether it is a wasting assets or not. So I would like to see in the future whether we can add more analysis. What's the, because we have no, everyone talk about wasting assets. We have no definition. What's the meaning of wasting assets? Is it exactly the same as PPE or other intangible assets? Or is that different? It, because it really matters about what's the nature of the goodwill. So this is the key. When we look at the nature of the goodwill, whether it's the wasting assets, then we can decide whether we need to reintroduce amortization. Whether, and when we decide the useful life of the goodwill, we need to look at whether, if it is wasting assets, is it similar as PPE or other intangible assets? Whether we need to apply same rule or same requirements as we developed it in the IS-16 and IS-38. I think this kind of argument is very important. Secondly, which approach will really helpful for users to hold management accountable. This is another argument, because some people say once we reintroduce the amortization, it will hold management accountable, you know, comparing to impairment loss model. But if, as Bertrand and Mary said, that if investors or even senior management look at another way, if we reintroduce amortization, but when they evaluate the performance of those business combination, they will end up to adding back those amortization has been recognized. So if so, whether reintroducing amortization really can hold management accountable, because investors seems they are going to make an adjustment, or others as well. Another point is I think we should be very careful to say that because of the goodwill, the balance of the goodwill is too high at this moment. Now we are going to reduce the carrying amount of the goodwill. Then one of the arguments to introduce that we needed to reintroduce the amortization. I see this is one argument to support to reintroduce amortization. I think we should be careful. Our objective is to provide useful information, not to reduce the carrying amount of assets, particularly goodwill. So so this is another thing I'm thinking about that. In terms of the disclosure, I totally agree with what Nick mentioned. I always think that from providing useful information perspective, those additional disclosure requirements really will make difference. So I would, whatever we are going to reintroduce amortization, or we are keep, you know, retain the impairment loss model, I hope that those disclosure requirements we developed it would be, you know, would be explored, in place in our future, you know, proposal. That's those information really useful for users. Thank you.
Thank you, Jinjiao. Sue, please.
Thanks, Andreas. So trying to focus on things that are helpful for the staff in terms of thinking about, you know, what information we need and how to bring the papers. So just before I do that, though, I just wanted to agree with Tom's comments about, you know, whether the information's new or not new, et cetera, et cetera. I think that was helpful in the discussion paper, because we really wanted to hear incremental information to help us make our decision. But now surely we want to consider all material information for our decision making, and it doesn't matter if it's old or new so much. We just want to, you know, have a good set of information to, as a foundation for our decisions, and we're not going to win any friends by saying that's not new or this is new and getting into those debates. For me, it really it's the package that really is going to matter to me. So the combination of what the disclosures we come up with is really important to me in terms of making decisions about what we do with the subsequent accounting for goodwill, partly for the reasons that Nick raised, which is really, I think investors aren't so fussed about the subsequent accounting of goodwill, but they're very interested in the overall information. And I think for me, that's my big learning from this part of the project, is sort of moving on to that way of thinking about things. The other thing that really strikes me when I look at this debate is there's just, you know, valid views in all sorts of different directions, and really lots of smart people with different perspectives in this debate. And so personally, I found it increasingly difficult to really say this is the right or the wrong answer for subsequent accounting for goodwill, because it depends on different perspectives and what you think the goodwill's about, whether you think it's a wasting asset or not, all sorts of things. And people have got, you know, legitimate arguments about things such as even the idea that there should be some sort of recognition that there is a cost over time of this acquisition that you should be trying to recoup over time. I certainly heard that in the Japanese outreach. So I'm trying now to sort of be a bit more open to thinking about how the best package works, making sure that what we come up with is a useful set of information for investors to understand what's happening in terms of was it a good business combination or not, and stewardship, holding management to account, the information they need for that sort of decision making is really important to me. While on the flip side, sort of checking all the time that the benefits investors are getting are justified for the costs that are going to be imposed on preparers of what that set of disclosures and the subsequent accounting, you know, means for them. So trying to get that balance right. So for me, I certainly would be happy to look at the disclosures first, but I'm going to refuse to put my hand up in either direction on subsequent accounting for goodwill until I know what the disclosure package looks like. So a sort of holistic approach will be what would work best with me.
Thank you. Anne and then Rika.
Thanks, Andreas. I've thought a lot about the costs of change, and bringing back amortization has many costs for many parties. And we've talked about it being arbitrary, so it brings noise into the system for users. And most empirical research concludes that amortization isn't useful information. Change in accounting means education for users. It means changes to prediction models. And, of course, it's a break in the time series data. I think a system change is also costly for preparers, some of whom are not asking for change. In addition to current effects in profit and loss, there are some entities with significant historical goodwill balances for which the accounting would have to be dealt with and hasn't been discussed yet. Already been mentioned today is the fact that many preparers will likely choose to provide a non-GAAP adjustment, creating more work on both sides. Preparers will need to be tracking, they'll need to apply judgment to tracking the goodwill balances, to estimating useful life, and so on. On balance, I don't see compelling evidence for change. I think stakeholder views are divided and they are unlikely to be reconciled. I think bringing back amortization is backward-looking. I think it reduces the usefulness of the impairment test. So I think the board's decision's around three things. Firstly, doing the least harm to the existing system. And I note that that was Nick's opening comment, least harm. So for me, that's not bringing back amortization. Secondly, providing better information for investors about a crucial area of economic activity. And we've heard that throughout the project, and it's been really emphasised today, the number of people who think these disclosures are so crucial. So second point, the disclosure package. And third point, improving the impairment test if we can within the constraints of not a major project on IAS 36. And we've discussed that earlier today as well. So my three things are least harm, better disclosures for the investors around subsequent performance, and if possible, improvements to impairment test, but narrow scope. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Let's hear from Rika.
Thank you. So we have continuously had split views, and the stakeholders had split views. So either accounting approach doesn't solve the issues, all of them identified by either parties, or so. So I actually think the most important thing to respond to the user's need is improvement in the or enhancement of the disclosure in connection with goodwill, as well as the subsequent performance of acquired business. That might be the one thing we need to pursue first to understand what the feasible disclosure requirement we can develop to enhance and improve the information in the financial statement. So that's a quite important point first. And then I consider this is a kind of the package project for all of us, not only us, probably with all of the stakeholders. So I will look into further about the cost incurred in connection with the preparing that enhanced the disclosures. So by doing that, Tadu already mentioned about some users have been swinging their point of view from supporting impairment only to reintroducing amortization model. But the basis for their support is if the goodwill amortization can also provide the useful information for them. And that is only the case, probably, when the life of the goodwill is reasonably determined. So I think efficacy and feasibility, as well as the usefulness of the information provided to amortizations, probably should be tested. But at the same time, we should be very realistic about the effectiveness or robustness of the estimate of life of goodwill, reasonably. Because I think, anyway, the subjectivity of determination of the goodwill's life will remain, even though we decide something a better idea. So I think if that subject, so I would like to ask the staff to explore a little bit in the future. If the subjectivity remain, even though we consider the specific approach that we can the entity can determine the goodwill life, but how much that subjectivity affects the usefulness of the information? And then also, please consider how much, what if it is possible for additional information to compensate that shortage of the information because of that subjectivity. So I think this is a question of kind of the bundle of the options, but I think we should continue explore as a package of the proposal. Thank you.
Thanks, Rika. And I have three people that wish to come back, being Bertrand, Mary, and Jin Zhao. And then I would provide a few remarks before handing it back to the team. Bertrand, please.
Just to say that I agree with Nick and then Sue's comments on the fact that the critical issue, the most critical issue of this DP is not goodwill amortization nor impairment test, it's the disclosures. Of course, as I said, from my perspective, it's because of the concerns, the huge concerns I've expressed on some of the disclosures proposed in the ED, in the EDP, sorry, and on the fact that it would lead to the disclosures of commercially sensitive information. I agree effectively with the fact that the disclosures part is probably the most critical issue, and that then the subsequent accounting for goodwill would depend on where the board leads or lands, sorry, in terms of disclosures.
Thank you, Mary.
I wanted to come back because as I reflect on today's discussion and the question of which decision does the staff ask us to make first, I wanted to encourage the staff to think about asking for next month for decisions about the disclosure package first. Very often we do disclosure as the follow-up to recognition, measurement, and presentation. In this case, it feels like the whatever package, however we flex it, of disclosures is more a standalone and the place where people feel that there's the most value. And so that we, especially given the kind of entrenched views that exist about amortization, pro and con of goodwill, that we probably are making that decision in the context of knowing what we are planning to propose for disclosure. So I'm saying it's a suggestion about sequencing. I thought, and I think that's consistent with both Bruce's and Nick's encouragement. And then I think as you think about the analysis you bring in September for the subsequent accounting for goodwill, I think Anne had some very good points about how we think about cost benefit and thinking about, you know, explicitly a broader range of cost benefit, of costs that we might. And I think Nick's comments also highlighted another cost, which is the cost of continuing to develop, you know, of devoting standard setting resources and stakeholder resources to developing the amortization model. Another comment about the paper you bring back and ways to think about things. We have a single objective for financial reporting that's providing useful information that allows users to, and I'm paraphrasing here, consider future cash flows and assess stewardship. And it might be helpful for each of the disclosure and the subsequent accounting leg to analyze each of those two kind of sublegs of the objective of financial reporting separately and see what you can say about how you think, you know, each alternative looks at each of those legs, not pages and pages, but just, you know, maybe think of them separately, because you could get some split views, particularly regarding stewardship, about which approach is more effective for that. And then the last piece of advice I wanted to offer is, and this echoes Sue's comments in a different way, I think we have to change our expectations that we think, give up the last shred of our expectations that we think we can resolve this issue. There's too much evidence on either side and too many strong views. I think what becomes more important is demonstrating that we heard and carefully considered the different pieces of evidence and being able to explain how we weighed them in reaching whatever package it is that we propose as an exposure draft, making an assumption there, rather than trying to prove that one is right and one is wrong. We can't leave a messy trail, but I think we should be realistic in our objectives. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Finally, Jinzhao.
Thank you. And just to add one comment, or actually to echo what Anne and Tom said, that because assessing the usefulness of different approaches, sometimes it's a little bit difficult, but I really appreciate that staff bring those academic findings in the paper. And the reading of those papers actually provide a lot of new evidence and information. That is really helpful. And I appreciate those academics who did those research. But additional comments on what Mary mentioned about the subsequence of future, you know, discussion, whether disclosure should be put forward first and or others later. I think it's fine to have disclosure, you know, combined or maybe combined with other disclosure, or have discussion or have disclosure part discussed earlier. But one just an additional point, even we discuss or decided disclosure part first, to make sure that we can come back again. Why I said that? Because if in the end we decide to reintroduce amortization, I think then additional disclosure requirements are needed in relation to how the company decided the useful life and other things, something like that. So maybe we need to develop additional disclosure requirements. Even we maybe need to revisit what's the revisit the additional disclosure requirements we decided before, because current disclosure requirements based on impairment only model. So I think this kind of thing also we should think about it together. Thank you.
Thank you, Jinjiao, and everyone who has contributed to that debate. I think it showed that it won't be easy going forward. So I'd start probably with the observation that, as I see it, it will probably become challenging to go to even tentative voting in September from what I've heard. Because most people have actually said, let's not concentrate on the subsequent method of accounting for goodwill, but let's really focus on a package. The package that today doesn't exist. We only know that it consists of at least two parts, being a set of disclosures and the subsequent method of accounting for goodwill. But this is rather general and not really specific. And I think quite a few of you have pointed out that if you were to change course, or if you would to put your weight behind the package, you really want to know what's in the package. So I wonder, if I look at the different options that the staff have provided, it really comes down to something between A and C in the options considered. So either you retain the model, but then you work on some disclosures, or you say, I'm ready to consider reintroduction of amortization, but only provided there is a set of disclosures. So I wonder whether we are already at this stage in September, and whether staff is in any position over the summer to really bring back papers that would talk to that end. And I don't want to exercise pressure here. I just want to manage expectations that, from all what I've heard today, it may be a bit too optimistic to say, let's vote even tentatively. If you say, staff, that at least a tentative directional vote would be helpful, then certainly we can certainly provide for that. And let me reassure you, board members, I won't hold you to account if subsequently you will change your position again, because I think we have heard so much information. We have heard so many caveats today that obviously we need to give staff ample time to actually work through the different avenues. And if there was a roadblock that currently we are not aware of, I mean, that would certainly be a factor that we need to then reconsider. So therefore, if at all we have any sort of voting in September, I think it may only be a directional vote in order to help staff progress with the project, but not really any firm decision as of yet to say we are going left or right. So that's one point that I would like to stress. The second point, and nobody has mentioned this today, but I look at our joint education session with FASB on Friday. I think the emphasis that I've heard in this discussion today was really about the decision usefulness of information around M&A transactions, which is all fair. The FASB are looking at it from a much narrower angle, because they are really devoting their attention towards the subsequent accounting of goodwill. And I think what we probably want to be factoring in at some stage is whether or not we change our accounting, whether or not we include new disclosures. I think there may even be cost for preparers and for users if we did nothing, but the FASB changed the way how they accounted for it, because then a formerly converged standard would become unconverged. And that would probably put stress on the user front for them to actually reconcile information that comes out of financial statements being prepared in one method of accounting or the other one. So I would just caution us a little bit in saying we should be mindful about the cost-benefit equation, but we should probably be also mindful that it is not completely only upon us, But there is another party that we would probably also want to talk to as to that. And it would be very interesting to actually exchange views on that and probably also make FASB colleagues aware of our points that you have been quite adamant around having the disclosure set right, bringing really decision useful information about the subsequent success of an acquisition. So with that, let me first get it back to Tim and then probably to Nili, because I've made that brave statement and she is probably about to grill me already as to are we ready to vote or not to vote in September. So first to Tim, whether he has anything that you would like from us board members in terms to how to progress further.
Well, I think maybe just reflecting on some of the comments you just made, Andreas, and what board members have made. I mean, I think the intention in September, it was always going to just be a tentative decision. It was a directional decision, and really it was to help the staff try to determine the sequence of when we bring things back to the board, because I mean, there are lots of different strands for this project, but concentrating on the two sort of big strands, disclosures and the subsequent accounting for goodwill, they're significant pieces of work that would need time for staff to work through, would need time for the board members to work through. And so the point of the sort of directional or tentative decision making that was in September was to try to give the staff some idea of where the priorities lie. Now, what we've heard today, it sounds quite like the priorities may well lie with the disclosures, and therefore I think it is important for us the staff to go away and reflect on how we do sequence this and how we do ask the questions in September. But that decision in September, let's just say it was amortization contingent on the disclosures. So let's go ahead and work on the disclosures. And like Sue said, let's see what the disclosure package is. The intention would then be, you know, what we're voting on there, or what the board would be voting on there, is to say, yeah, we are willing to explore amortization, but it's contingent on that disclosure package. So once we've got a better idea, we've done the work and we've got the better idea on the disclosure package, it would then obviously be within the board's gift to then say, well, looking at that package, do I think that's strong enough for me to continue with a view of let's go and explore amortization? And so that was, I guess that was the sort of purpose of the September decision making, was to give us some sort of sense of what we should be prioritizing. And we thought that amortization and having the discussion around amortization was useful, because it seems to unlock the lock, as it were, to some of these decisions. And I think the point you made, Andreas, as well is important. In terms of the joint meeting with FASB, I think it is very important for board members, you know, to go into that meeting and to listen to, you know, to what the FASB are doing in their project as well. Because one of the things we do need to think about is convergence, and how important is convergence. And that's part, I think, of this sort of tentative decision-making process. But we've heard a lot today, I think, as staff. And I think, you know, we'll reflect on that and think about, as we were going to, think very carefully about what type of question we will ask in September. But I do think having some sort of direction from the board as to that prioritisation would be really helpful, albeit that today it does seem to be a strong push for disclosures to be worked on. I don't know
whether
Craig or Jarvid had anything they just wanted to add to that.
Please, guys, do come in if you do have additional comments.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think Jim covered everything that we would intend to say.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And Andreas, if I could just follow up on that, yeah. I would agree as well that to progress the project, we do need a vote in September. But I absolutely agree with you that it's not something that we would say board members cannot change their mind, because I think the development of these difficult issues will affect what board members may think later. So I think what you proposed makes perfect sense.
Okay, Okay, and can I just see by sign of body language whether board members agree with that as well, so that we're not sending off staff back and are completely surprised by what we are going to see in September. Are we all happy with what Tim has summarized as their potential next steps? Can I just see a thumbs up as he nods. Mary is not so happy.
Yeah, if I could just comment on why I'm reacting that way. Tim was very much putting it as a package where it's amortization, perhaps, you know, he wasn't saying it is a decision for amortization. He was saying a decision about amortization, perhaps contingent on disclosure. And what I heard from today's comments, and the reason that I came back in before, was primarily to say what I took away was people want to make a decision about disclosure because unusually this disclosure package has relatively little interaction with specific recognition and measurement decisions. I'm absolutely signed on with it's tentative decision, so we can start putting together a package that we vote on. But I was just a little concerned about the way it got compiled is, I think, the way I would put it.
Got it. So I think the intention, Tim, if I may put words in your mouth, it was certainly not to say we lure people into amortization and you get a wonderful disclosure package for that. I think to reflect on a point that Jinjiao has made, I think a number and probably a good deal of the disclosures are probably agnostic of any subsequent accounting of goodwill, but some are obviously tied to the specific method of accounting, and these have to be worked on given the specific direction that the board is then going to take. I think at this stage, I would have enough comfort for staff to say, okay, let's dwell on those and see what makes most sense for you to actually develop a plan going forward. And if you say it would be more helpful for you to think of it as a holistic package, and that comes with a quote-unquote tentative decision on the subsequent accounting for goodwill, so be it. If you say we can actually start working on the disclosures that are accounting agnostic first, I think that would also work from our end potentially. Okay, any last remarks on that one? So that was probably the easy bit. I'm looking forward to the subsequent discussion on that in September. But for today, I thank you very much. I would just chime in to what Boltmes has said and congratulate the team for a very thorough piece of work. I must say it was a long time since I've been asked to read several hundred of pages, and knowing that this was one project with about 100 pages, I must say I thoroughly enjoyed that, reading all the arguments. I think these papers have been really well crafted. Thank you very much. And I'm very much looking forward to the next round of papers, not saying they have to be 100 pages, but anyway. With that, I close off today's session to the public, and we see you again tomorrow. And I would ask board members to stay on. Thank you.